Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Mark and Sarah talk, Mark and Sarah talk, Mark and Sarah talk about songs, talk about songs.
We're now ready to talk about side two of Bridge Over Troubled Water.
Oh boy. Once again, this album wastes no time throwing you right in the emotional deep end with what is, I'm going to say, if it's not their best known song, it's probably in the top three, right? With The Boxer. We do have a clip. Do you have any lead up comments before we hear a clip from The Boxer?
Just that this song reached number six, and it reached number six in 1969. It was originally released as a standalone single, and it was common practice at the time for the standalone singles not to be included on albums, but they did put The Boxer on this album, and I think that was the right choice.
I think so, too. I think that it follows the narrative path that the album sets really well, and here's a clip. Not that anyone needs one, but...
Asking only workman's wages, I come looking for a job, but I get no offers. Just to come home from the wars on 7th Avenue. I do declare there were times when I was so lonesome I took some comfort there. La 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 la.
Oh, that lonesome piccolo. I mean, there are so many good... I really struggled to find the clip for this song because there's so many good sketch lyrics, like where the ragged people go, looking for the places only they would know, like this sort of shadow world that the ragged people inhabit anywhere in the world. This is another wonderful story song that I think I may have a different interpretation of the ending. So I'd like to ask you what you think is happening at the end. It's another beautiful, lonely capsule. It sort of brings Midnight Cowboy to mind for me, not just because of the whores on 7th Avenue. That's not how we talk, Paul. But that just like, utterly cold, harsh loneliness of the city sometimes that you almost would rather get in a fight at a fight club than spend another night by yourself talking back to your TV. I mean, it seems like a sacrilege to rank it where I did, given how much respect I have for this song and that I'm not sick of it, even though it's a sort of oldie station classic. But I mean, this is a great song. This is a beautiful song, but it's still only number five.
Whoa.
So 7 points. I mean, look, this album is difficult. But I'm interested to hear, I have two questions for you. First of all, do you think that it's too long? And second of all, do you think that at the end, it's sort of like the end of Jacob's Ladder, where the boxer has died and passed over, and what we're hearing in the song is that like last electrical flicker of the brain?
Oh. So do you think that the song is told, do you think that the narrator is the boxer?
Not necessarily. I think that the narrator is like the filmmaker. I just get this like Terrence Malick-y feeling that this is about the boxer going through the veil.
Interesting. See, this is also speaks to the excellence of the songwriting here, because it is that then, because I think that's a perfectly valid interpretation.
Yeah. I mean, if you're like, no, it's actually about the, you know, Hegelian dialectic, like, yeah, it's that too. That's fine. Like, I think it can contain those multitudes.
I do want to note, I misspoke before. The song peaked at number seven, not number six. We regret the error. So to me, the last verse of The Boxer, let me just read it to you, because I do find this moment in the song to be breathtaking. I literally hold my breath during this moment in the song almost every time I hear it. In the clearing stands a boxer and a fighter by his trade. And well, actually, let's go back a bit, because we've already heard that the narrator is laying out his winter clothes and wishing he was gone, going home where the New York City winters aren't bleeding me, leading me, going home. Okay, so he's already at a low point in the song where he's putting out his, I have always imagined, rather moth-eaten, sad scarf and
yep.
that heavy overcoat that he got at Goodwill. And he's
that no longer has a shape.
Yes, or a exactly. color. That sort of big blankety thing that probably doesn't even really keep him cold because the lining is ripped, but he's just doing his best.
Yeah.
And I've always thought it was so interesting that he says in the clearing, because he's in the fucking city. Like, what? I love that. Like, what's probably, I've always imagined it as just being like some sad lot that used to have a building on it.
Right.
But you say, in the clearing stands a boxer and a fighter by his trade, and he carries the reminders of every glove that laid him down or cut him till he cried out in his anger and his shame. I am leaving, but the fighter still remains. Okay, so I think, for me, I am leaving, is the narrator speaking. It is not the boxer saying, I am leaving. I think that as the narrator has finally decided he's going to leave, like the winter clothes thing was the last thing for him. I've always imagined it this way. And as he's hustling toward the train station to just give up on New York City, he passes by this guy who's just standing in an empty lot, still wounded by all of the ways that life, actual literal fighting perhaps, or just life in New York, or just life in general, still wounded by all the ways he's been humiliated. And he's still standing there fighting in this empty lot purposelessly. And so the narrator notices him as he hustles along in the cold. And he's saying, I am leaving, but the fighter still remains. And this is what always gets me about the way I interpret this part of the song. Because the boxer to me becomes a symbol here. He's like, he's fighting against New York and he's just fighting against life. And there's just always someone who's just the image of someone standing in a vacant lot, bleeding from the nose, crying out and swinging at the air, trying to beat life while someone else hustles away and gives up. That juxtaposition, I find it almost topples me. It's sublime to me, because what a perfect distillation of the various points that we all find ourselves at in life, where we either do or don't have the energy for this fight. And yes, to go back to your point, eventually that fight is with death itself and we're all destined to lose. So I think it the veil does come up. And, you know, there is no... Paul Simon has said that lie, la, lie was just nonsense for him, that it didn't mm-hmm. mean the word like telling a lie, a falsehood. But I don't think it really matters what Paul Simon thinks at this point. The song itself to me means it, because the narrator is obsessed with the lie that he allowed himself to believe in, believing that he would have his dreams come true in New York. And that's why, to answer your other question, I don't think that the song is too long. I think that the image of this guy hustling to the train station, for me, just saying lie, lie, lie over and over and over again, while this poor bloody bastard is behind him swinging forever at a thing he cannot beat. All of that is just the crushing realization of what a waste it's all been. And it is like the fucking saddest song, but so beautiful. It's the kind of pain that I love. There ends my dissertation on The Boxer.
I think that, I mean, as you're describing this scene of the narrator rushing to what I imagine is the Port Authority.
Oh, absolutely. It's not Grand Central with the pretty interior.
No, it's that scrubbly Port Authority, which is where we would always disembark on trips to New York when I was a kid, and like immediately toothless junkies trying to bite you and your mom. And like when people say they miss that New York, I'm like, why? Like, do you understand that it's gone because all of those troubled people were crushed under the boot of like capitalism and life? Anyway, I can exactly picture like where that lot would be. It would be like this man. There's like little snowflakes coming down. He smells like basement.
Yes.
He's yelling at a cloud. And he's under one of those old signs sort of peeling off the side of a building for like, you need a biscuit or something. And,
right.
And like, I can exactly picture your interpretation. At the same time, there are no clearings in New York City. I mean, maybe there's one in like Prospect Park, but like a clearing, like there's such a surreal, like end of life, delusion quality to a boxer stepping out of some trees in a glade and into this field. There's nothing about his opponent. There's nothing about a ring. The only part of the boxer metaphor that works is the boxer himself. Like there's no other ancillary figurative language to help it. And that's why I feel like there's this, you know, at the towards the end of Superman 2, when he chooses to like, or not, it's actually the middle. He chooses to give up his powers. Spoiler, I guess. This movie's 40 years old. And like the image of Superman sort of falls away in that chamber. And then Christopher Reeve remains like solid in human guise in his human clothes.
Mm-hmm.
That's sort of what I think of as like this parting of the consciousness, and one part of it is leaving the mortal plane, but then the fighter part of it, the sort of essential self, remains. This is so far above my pay grade as a, like, the epistemology of death. Like, I don't know what I'm talking about, but that we're able to create entire Joseph Mitchell novellas, plural,
yes,
from a song that's 5 minutes long. Like, I mean, and yet it's my number five. Like, I might be doing this wrong. It's I might be doing it wrong. You know who's not doing it wrong? Paul Simon.
Damn right. Yeah.
So the where thing did is, you rank this?
What I love is that we're both right. And anybody else who's listening who has a different interpretation is also right.
Yeah. Unless you're like, this song stinks, which like, if you've heard it too many times, I will allow it. But if you can't even make room for the craft.
Yeah, it is. It's not every album that is just this chock-a-block with songs that are so fucking astonishing.
Yeah, this is an all-time classic that you've heard a gazillion times too many for a reason. And it might not be the reasons that you think.
It's legitimate. Yeah. Oh, my God. So I love that we both have those levels of interpretation because the song invites them. It is for me my number two with 10 points. Mm. And
oh boy,
it
okay.
is far and away by like something like 12 votes, the number one song for the patrons.
I respect that.
Yeah, I do too.
So, I'm neither mad nor disappointed. Well done.
And you know, you've made the point earlier about how glad you are that there are some emotional breaks on this album. And I am so glad that Baby Driver comes between the boxer and the only living boy in New York. If only for that reason.
Bow, 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 bow. I regretted not clipping this, and so I just didn't clip it. I adore this song. I think the harmonies are great. I think it's really simple. My understanding is that it's about a guy deciding to lose his virginity when his parents are out of town, basically. Like, okay. Kind of a tonal whiplash there, but
yes,
you need, like, between the boxer and the only living boy in New York, like, you need something that's just like, hey, fast cars and fucking, like, well, that's a little off brand, but sure. I can sing every single part of this song, including reciting the Speedway call at the end.
Oh, nice.
I went through a period where I was obsessed with this song in college. I put it on every mixtape. People are like, why are you... are you just being like performatively obscure? And I'm like, actually, no, for once. I'm not. I just really love the song. Given that I ranked it ahead of the boxer and didn't clip it, this is maybe not the homage that it deserves, but I had it at number four.
Whoa. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just a very uncomplicated It's a very uncomplicated response that I have to this song. Like, it sounds good. It creates warmth.
Yeah.
In my ear hole. I like it. It's number four.
And, you know, I don't mean it as an insult when I say it's clearly like a Beach Boys song. Like, Paul Simon does the Beach Boys is how I've always heard it.
Yeah. I was like, Tom and Jerry meets Jan and Dean. Totally.
Totally. Well, and you, for me, it's at number six, right there in the middle. Yeah. But that's... I got no kick with this song, as they say. And I do think in terms of the album sequence, it comes at exactly the right time. So the patrons feel less enamored of it. Although I will say that even down in ninth place, it still got something like 8 votes. So it's not like it was a complete wash.
Okay.
So that's 9th from them, 4th from you, 6th from me.
Ooh, okay. That brings us then... as all roads must, to the only living boy in New York. I'd like to begin by remembering my experience of watching The Normal Heart on HBO and how my husband came home and I was at, like, it was the credits. And my husband came home at that point and comes in the front door. And at that time we lived in a place where you went in the front door and then turned left and there was the TV room. And he found me I had just tipped over sideways onto the couch and was laying there with tears streaming at a 90-degree angle straight down into the couch. And that spot did not dry for like a day and a half. That film was extraordinary, and I'd never want to go near it again because I don't think I'll survive. And... The Only Living Boy in New York played at the end. So that's the hem of the garment that we're about to try on here, everyone. I guess now we should hear a clip. I have a Kleenex at the ready. Mark, are you prepared?
I do believe so, yes.
Okay, here we go. Your honesty shine now. Lord, I can shine for me. The only living boy in New York. The only living boy in New York.
I'm so glad that you clipped the part that you clipped, because when he says, let your honesty shine the way it shined on me, that goes back to my earlier statement about this album being about a beautiful friendship that needs to end, because it's like,
yeah,
what a fucking beautiful thing to say about someone that you care about. And like, you know that the world is going to get to see them in the way that you've gotten to see them. And even though it means you don't get to see them like that for a while, you're glad that other people do. Like, that's like really loving someone. Oh.
Well, and everything about that segment has this funereal feeling, the choir harmonies, the organ. And there's also this, I mean, there's also this, it's Paul Simon singing, but the vocal is very Garfunkelian.
Mm-hmm.
So there's this, I mean, Paul Simon usually keeps his powder quite dry, which is why when there is emotion, it's devastating. Because he isn't as free with it vocally as Garfunkel is. Mm-hmm. And so this sort of ragged wail occasionally, which is then quickly controlled, It's like he doesn't want Tom, which, you know, they used to be Tom and Jerry. That was their original folk duo name. So this fond nickname from the past that he's using in this valedictory way for this relationship.
Mm.
And then sort of pulling the emotion back so that Art Garfunkel doesn't feel guilty about going on his way. The real and recognizable quality of trying to communicate with someone in this way is, I mean, it gets me from a different angle every time, but it still gets me every time. Every time.
I mean, I have tears
so, yeah,
in my eyes. I've had them since the clip started. So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, and yeah, there's like a tear. It's sort of like welling. There's like a puddle at the bottom of one of my eyeglass lenses. Yeah, I mean, I miss people. And this song is, every now and then you just need to like have a cry, I think. And this song can sort of let you, it sort of opens the door into saying goodbye to people that you miss again, and then going back about your day.
It gets
to that midnight cowboy loneliness that is like a particular city loneliness, and feeling like you're the only, like how lonely grief is, and it's particular sometimes, and the way that it shifts, and you can't always, like, even if people who are still around want to shoulder some of that weight, they can't always get the same handhold that you have. I mean, it's just, it's extraordinary songwriting. Spoiler, this is absolutely my number one. I could not put any other song in that spot. And I'm sorry that I was that Paul Simon of the pair went Garfunkel on you there for a second.
I love it. You know, no, don't ever apologize.
You're my Garfunkel.
Oh.
I love you the most.
I love
Tom,
you so much.
Get your plane right on time.
You know, I was like crying on the phone talking to you about our relationship the other day, as you well know.
We do that.
I just also find it so incredibly moving in this song. How it's just so easy to be angry at someone when they leave, or to be angry at someone when something changes. But when you really love someone, you accept and own your sadness and you don't make it their problem.
Yeah.
And the depth of compassion and feeling that he demonstrates in this song, and the way that he just wants the world to get to experience what his friend has to offer, even though he's devastated that he won't get to experience it. It's just so real. And it's just like such a, I think of this song as being a vision of what we should all try to be, because nobody gets to escape disappointment, but we can choose to greet it with this sense of affection. And this could be applied to someone who has died. It could be applied to someone who is simply moving across town, but this is like how I want to live in the world. Like, this is a goal for me emotionally.
Yeah, grace.
Grace is right.
Grace.
And so now I have to try to explain to you one of the most profound experiences I've ever had of experiencing live music.
Okay.
There is a band called Sky Pony that performed at a place downtown in New York called the Sheen Center. And they have a pretty small stage there. But when Sky Pony, which is like six people, decided that they were going to perform The Only Living Boy in New York, they got, I think, like 20 people from this Greenwich Village neighborhood choir up on the stage with them. And wow. Sky Pony is a band that puts on a really great show, and they were in very elaborate makeup and costuming. And then these 20 folks from the village, which was, you know, we were in the village, just people from the neighborhood, they walked on and they were just wearing like shirts. You know, they're just normal people. And they were singing the choral parts that you hear in this song in this tiny space. And I swear to God, it was like what religion is supposed to be when I heard that.
And transporting. Well, and what a wonderful like since Simon and Garfunkel came out of the village beatnik scene, like yeah. what a wonderful place and vibe for that
yeah.
transporting experience.
And there are recordings that they've done of other performances of the song, even with the choir, and they don't hold up because how could they hold up? Because I was just there having this experience, and that's another reason that I love this song. Now, all that being said, Sarah, it is still only my fifth place song.
Oh my God.
I'm sitting here like tears rolling down my face, talking about how the song introduced me to the feeling of what religion is supposed to create. Fifth place.
This is where I was with the boxer. But I'm really glad that you told that story because you created my segue into a clip that I pulled of the same song by David Mead, who I think is ordinarily quite gifted at when he does a cover. Like he has a cover of, oh my God, why can't I remember the song? It's a Michael Jackson song. Oh my God.
Human Nature?
Never mind. Yes. Thank you. I can't believe you got it from my shitty singing. You're the best.
That's why we're married.
So, well, seriously, I'm lucky that was in tune. David Mead usually is better at identifying the parts of an existing song that he can leverage his talents to like raise those parts and then drop out the other parts. So when his cover of The Only Living Boy in New York was on Everwood, which of course it was, talk about automatic tears, I was a little surprised that the interpretation wasn't everything that I hoped. And I'm wondering, I'm going to play a short clip, roughly the same part of the song. I'm wondering what you think of the idea that this song, outside of its original, like it can't be experienced as recorded by someone else. Like that you would have to be in the room with it, which is sometimes the case, not always. Anyway, here's a clip.
Hey, let your honesty shine, shine, shine now. Dot loom dot like it shines on me. Only living boy in New York. The only living boy in New York.
I just think David Mead plus that song should be way better than that is. And I'm not exactly sure why it doesn't work.
Thoughts? I think that you're right. There's something... like, that was perfectly pretty.
Yeah, it was fine. It wasn't incompetent. He has a lovely instrument. But I think that because he does not come at it from, like, usually he's the Garfunkel in any arrangement. And I think you have to come at this vocal from a Simon, to start from a Simon place. Otherwise, it's too much. Like, I feel like he was trying to sort of like it shines on me. Like, okay. Like it's all right there in the lyric. You don't actually have to do that much to it. But at the same time, if you're not Paul Simon sort of sending Art Garfunkel off on an ice floe, then maybe it just doesn't connect. But then you told that story about seeing it live. So maybe the harmony is necessary.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I think that there's something in this song that makes it maybe work best live, unless you're Paul Simon who lived it. I don't know. It's interesting to think
about.
Yeah.
I don't know either. David Mead, if you're listening to this, I hope you're not for your sake, but first of all, you're great. But second of all, why don't you write me?
Before we go on, let me just say the patrons put this song in third place. So
okay.
Number one from you, third place from them, fifth place from me. But now, what were you? Had a letter, I think you were going to write me?
I was inviting David Mead to write us in lieu of actually discussing. We don't have a clip for this, do we?
No, good Lord, no.
okay, why don't you write me, is not helped by coming in after the mood of The Only Living Boy in New York. But mostly it's just not my thing. The faux reggae is not the greatest. The wah, wah, wah. Like, it just seems very glib. Maybe whoever it is isn't writing you because you're an emotional abuser who makes threats of suicide.
Oh, yeah. Like, I'm going to hang myself from a tree if you don't send me a letter.
Hi, it's tree. Yeah, fuck you. Don't do that, even as a joke. I know it was 1970, but that's not okay. And it's just not... it's not pleasant to listen to, and it's super jarring after this experience of, like, lived loss and renewal in The Only Living Boy in New York. Then there's this turd. I hate this song. Last place, 1 point.
That is also where the patrons put it, and in fact, it only got one vote. So, who knows?
Don't we have someone who always votes for one thing because she feels sad for it?
Yeah, I think that's what happened. I think it might be Kat who likes to vote for the underdog. Well, anyway, that's, and I put this song in
Kat's like, it's not me.
I put this song in ninth place because I just, but it's like the bottom three for me, this El Condor Pasa and So Long Frank Lloyd Wright, like, it, like, they're all kind of in last place. I just like this one marginally
this is what
higher
I was saying before
because it's bouncier, I guess.
Mm-hmm. So you'd rather be a forest than a you'd rather be a letter than a
snake
than a street
or guy. Yeah, I guess so.
Than point, a snail.
point being, ninth place, 3 points. Both of you and the patrons put it in last place. I certainly have never had an experience listening to Why Don't You Write Me that made me think about religion.
Maybe praying that it would be over.
Yeah.
Let's take a quick break from talking about music to talk about kicks, namely the ones you can find at our newest sponsor, eBay.com. As the original sneaker marketplace, eBay is the place to go to snag the pair you've been eyeing. With eBay's authenticity guarantee, your sneakers are meticulously inspected by a team of independent professional authenticators who verify the box, logo, stitching, and dozens of other inspection points. I kind of want this job. And give sneaks a digital stamp of authenticity. And here's a plus for sneaker sellers. eBay has eliminated selling fees on sneakers $100 and up, making it free to sell or flip your collection. Go to ebay.com/sneakers today. eBay. The world's best destination for discovering great value and unique selection. ebay.com/sneakers. Thanks, eBay.
Then we get to the weirdest moment on this album, which is a live cover of the Everly Brothers' Bye Bye Love.
Okay. And we don't have a clip. I like this way better than the original, which, and of course, to me, this was the original.
Mm-hmm.
I actually got in an argument in the car with, I think, my dad about it. I was like six. And I'm like, oh, it's that Simon and Garfunkel song. He's like, well, actually, my dad, the original reply guy. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I mean, there was no internet because it was 1979 or whatever. And I was like enraged. I was similarly enraged when my grandmother claimed that Bryn Mawr, Pennsylvania fire engines were green. And I was like, not only is that a lie, how dare you even suggest that fire engines not be red? And then one drove by and it was green. I don't know what Bryn Mawr is trying to play at. I burst into tears and was inconsolable for like 2 hours. I was furious. It was just like an inversion of the order of things, and I had not been consulted.
Oh my
but,
God, Sarah.
Enough about me being Phoebe Bridgers from the earliest possible age.
You know, I was talking about things that we've never known about each other. I have never heard that story before, and I love it. I have such affection for you. There's a new facet of my affection for you now.
We were like in town oh my God, we were in town. I think we had walked out. It was like four blocks away from her house, which was a block away from the campus. And in case anyone's trying to locate themselves, Yelp Bryn Mawr graduates, she lived on North Marion Drive. And we're like walking home from town. I think we were at her friend's house for tea or something. And like this fire engine, and she was like, see? And, you know, she was as sort of smug and graceless a winner as Buntings are, my grandma. So I started sobbing, and she had to like steer me home because I was crying so hard that I couldn't see. And now the dog is freaking out because, look, fire engines should be red.
God damn. You know that whole meme that happens from time to time online where they're like, tell one story from your childhood that epitomizes everything about you as an adult?
That, oh my God. Yes. Absolutely rigid, compulsive rule follower who, and super defensive about being wrong about stuff. Oh my God. My grandmother told that story on me until, I'm going to say, 2 days before she died too, as she should have, because I mean, calm down, Sarah. Jesus, who cares?
Oh, your dog is clearly still like, mad on your behalf though.
Oh my God. Somewhere beyond the veil, she's like telling the story again to my grandfather, who's like, I heard, she sounds like a pill. Anyway.
So all of that said, that's probably more than I have to say. What you just told us is probably more than I have to say about the cover of Bye Bye Love. I mean, I agree with you. I prefer it too, because I find, we talked about this when we discussed Linda Ronstadt's cover of When Will I Be Loved, but I just don't enjoy the way that the Everly Brothers' voices sound. So this version of Bye Bye Love is better to me. Eighth place, because, you know, it's, I don't know, it's just, it's fine. Eighth place, 4 points for me.
Yeah, I enjoy the hand claps and the, like, laughing and screeching in the middle, because, I don't know, like, that's the, that's one of the parts I like about the Central Park album too, is like when they're singing America and they say the line about the New Jersey Turnpike and then the crowd is like, yeah, like, really? We're cheering the Turnpike now? You guys must be really happy that these two are back together. Yeah, I mean, I like the song fine, and I like it so much better without the hornet's nest vocals that the Everly Brothers bring. I had it in the same place, eighth, 4 points.
Well, that's also, it was in a tie for eighth place from the patrons, so we just all completely agree.
Oh, harmony.
And that brings us to Song for the Asking, our less than 2 minutes long closing track. And Sarah, if I'm not mistaken, we do have a clip for this.
Here it is now.
Ask me and I'll play all the love that I hold inside.
You know, there's really not that much to this song, but the fact that it's the last one and it's this like beautiful, like little waltz. But I think the meta meaning of it in the context of the valediction of this album is maybe greater than the song's like worth qua song. But it's so, I mean, it's like simple and beautiful and like simple in this almost abstracted to a fairy tale way, and then it ends on this like twang, like there is an uptick, but it's still like kind of a minor chord thing. I just think it's really well done, even though it really is this like not amuse-bouche, but like, you know, it's one of those Simon and Garfunkel songs. It's like it's a minute 45. It's like bookends. You just put it on the end of side A of a mixtape, like that's its function, and you don't always hear it really. But yeah, I mean, I like it, and it reminded me of one of my favorite songs of all time, Renee and Georgette Magritte by Paul Simon. And just the way he has sometimes of ending things where like the last note sustains and you're like, oh, that was cute. So in case anyone has been unable to catharsize this experience to date, I do have a clip from that. Mark, unless you have anything urgent to say about Song for the Asking before I play it.
No, just that it's lovely, and it is, I think of it again as being part of the My Friend is Leaving canon of this album, where he's saying, here, take this tune from me. I'm going to acknowledge as best I can in this short amount of time that I'm not perfect and you're not perfect, but I really care about you. It's lovely, and it's a nice sigh on which to end the album.
Yeah, yeah. All the love that I hold inside. Like, I mean, what a Paul Simon way of putting it, that it's like, yeah, whatever, so I guess I'll see you around. Best friend. Like, oh, okay, Paul Simon, you're killing us here, please. Yeah, he's really good at that. Like, for the, this is one of the many reasons that this album makes me think of us, Mark and Sarah, as Simon and Garfunkel, that this seemingly minimalist, unsentimental one is actually a Malamar whose thin chocolate shell hides a reserve of very soft marshmallow. This is really not a revelation to anyone who has listened to even 2 minutes of this podcast ever, despite the phantom jokes. But this is really what I mean in Renee and Georgette Magritte. Here's the clip.
And what do you think they have hidden away in the cabinet cold of their hearts? The penguins, the moon glows, the Oreos, and the 5 cents. For now and then. Renee and Georgette Magritte with their dog after the war.
I just love that it's the two of them sort of contemplating their past and the world of two, that and this cabinet of sort of emotional curiosities that contains all music.
Mm.
And so that's, I think, the world of us two.
Oh, I do too. One of the things I said in my vows to my husband at our wedding was about the joy of becoming the world's expert in the minutiae of the person that you're marrying.
Like, yeah, I remember that.
I am the supreme curator of the Andrew Museum, and he is the supreme curator of the Mark Museum, because we just know all these weird things about each other that nobody else knows. But I think that the level of emotional specificity with which we have conducted ourselves during these now almost 5 years, we're not kidding when we say that we're pod married.
No. It's true. It's true. Renee and Georgette Magritte and their pod. After
so,
the war. That's us.
To take us back to Song for the Asking, I put it in seventh place and gave it 5 points. I am guessing, based on what I'm looking at here, that you also put it in seventh place?
Yes, I did.
Yes, and the patrons had it in a tie for eighth with Bye Bye Love. So that's 4 points for them. And yeah, that seems right. You know, there's another episode of this show where we talked at least briefly about Renee and Georgette Magritte and their dog after the war, but I cannot remember for the life of me.
I mean,
when it happened.
I feel like I bring it up. I feel like I bring it up in a sideways fashion, because I feel like to actually try to devote an entire episode to this song, I would like physically dissolve. And I would just be this puddle that you would have to carry around like in a fishbowl. with some colorful sea glass in it and be like, this is my former co-host, Sarah. She's dissolved.
She's still crying. Apologies in advance.
Yeah. I mean, I think that I oversubscribe this song in a big way, but there's the wistfulness of this vocal, but also the safety and security of these people, you know, in a city not their own, but they're together. I don't know. He really has a way of conveying that I hope the academic music establishment appreciates how easy he makes it look and how very difficult it is to have multiple songs in your catalog that will destroy a grouchy old asshole like myself in like four bars. So yeah. But that's why I think I'd never bring it for a full episode, because it's like, does anyone want to hear me blowing my nose for 15 minutes?
Well, with that said, because we do want you to keep some salt water in your body.
Yeah.
Now let's look at our final standings. Very last is Why Don't You Write Me with a mere 5 points. That seems about right. Yeah. Next to last is El Condor Pasa. Nope, nope, mm-hmm. nope. Incorrect.
No, you couldn't.
Next to last. That was actually a Freudian slip of me wanting it to be next to last. So coming in last place is Why Don't You Write Me. Next to last is So Long, Frank Lloyd Wright.
Okay.
And then going back from the bottom, then the next song up with 10 points is El Condor Pasa. So those are our bottom three.
Okay.
Now we have a tie for second place, but I'm going to choose to allow them both to retain the silver medal. So okay. In fourth place with 20 points, we have Keep the Customer Satisfied.
Huh.
Which okay. I think is a pretty good showing for that song.
Neat. Yeah.
In third place with 27 points, and it's super tight here at the top, is The Only Living Boy in New York.
Okay.
Tied for second with 28 points. So again, 27 points for third, 28, merely 1 point more for second. A tie between Bridge Over Troubled Water and The Boxer.
Okay.
Which means, Sarah, that with 29 points, only 1 point above that, but with 29 points in first place is Cecilia.
Ah, okay.
And it wasn't anybody's first place pick. It was my third, your second, the patron second. But it was able, through the law of averages and the preferential ballot, to become the first place pick.
Well, and in the top four or five, it's like 1 point separating them, right? So
yeah, it's the top four songs. There are one with 27 points, two with 28 points, and one with 29 points. So that's a really, really tight race.
Yeah, that's so interesting. I really thought that. I really thought I was going to be much more on my own with Cecilia, but I'm glad I wasn't.
In fact, she's breaking all of our hearts, but we like it.
Yeah, we do.
And what I also like is the opportunity to spend a good full afternoon talking about this album to you.
Oh my God. Yeah, I really have to go hydrate. Not with orange seltzer, though.
No, gross.
I know.
See, you're a curator of weird facts.
I'm telling you, I don't think that's that weird a fact. I always look at it askance now, too, that I'm like, all right, then.
Judged.
Like, I don't mind you, but my friend would like a word.
Well, Patreons, thank you
so much. Listeners, thank you so much. Simon and Garfunkel, thank you both so much.
And patrons, thank you also for your participation in the polls. And I have to say, the listeners and the patrons both, your comments as we approached this episode have been a delight to experience on our Patreon page and on social media. So we also will look very much forward to hearing your thoughts on how this album has shaken out for us.
Many's the time I've been mistaken, and many times confused. Yes, and I've often felt forsaken, and certainly missed.
Mark and Sarah Talk About Songs is hosted by Mark Blankenship, that's me, and Sarah D. Bunting.
That's me. I also edit the podcast, which is a proud member of the Bleav Network. Learn more at bleav.com.
To learn more about us, submit song requests, get a pop chart reading, or buy a Mastis book, visit our website at markandsarahtalkaboutsongs.com. You'll also find all of our social media links there, too.
That's Mark and Sarah, with an H, talkaboutsongs.com. And for even more content and access to the Mastass Happy Hour, become a Patreon supporter at patreon.com/mastass.
Thanks for listening.
Or driven to its knees. But it's all right. It's all right. For we live so well, so long. Still, when I think of the road we're traveling on, I wonder what's gone wrong. I can't help it, I wonder what's gone wrong.
Mark and Sarah talk, Mark and Sarah talk, Mark and Sarah talk about songs, talk about songs.
Thank you for listening to Bleav. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Bleav.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.